there are a lot of good lessons, spiritual lessons, when you watch some of these games. It's mentioned even throughout the scriptures, not football per se, but I want to talk about a little bitty piece of that. How many people here have ever worn some type of headgear? Any type of headgear? Anybody? Okay, so a lot have not. You've never really worn headgear. Now, when we went out to the camp directors conference and they took us out to look at the building, everybody had to wear hard caps. You know, just in case you're walking and something would walk off a scaffold, it's just one of those things. Too many accidental injuries, even deaths, have occurred because of people not wearing the proper equipment. So it's interesting. Now, if you've not done that before, if you've not had to wear that, it's going to be a little bit more difficult to explain the necessity of what the Bible talks spiritually about this. And this is critical. This is critical for your salvation. This is so important. So I'd like to look at that piece today. It's something because all the things that society is throwing at you. In fact, just now I wanted to make sure that I was accurate in saying this because here I am in North Carolina that's always had a really good basketball team. And I know I'm kind of watching. I don't watch any of the games. I just am too busy to do that unless it's going to be March Madness starts up. You're going to see some better basketball games. But I was watching to see. I'm going, you know something? You know who's number one in the NCAA men's division? Tennessee! Really? Tennessee doesn't win much of anything. So this is like really important for our area. I always just want the football is really important over there. So I always like Tennessee to win. Not that I just totally favor Tennessee at all, but things are just going to be a lot nicer in Knoxville if they win. People are going to have nicer attitudes. They're going to smile more. They're not going to walk around grumpy because that's it to them. That's all they've got in Knoxville. No professional teams. It's just that. Well, now the men's team. And it used to be, if you remember, a woman that was very popular at the time, Pat Summitt. She was the coach for years of the Lady Vols, and the Lady Vols were always way up at the top as well. So they always have something to carry them. Well, now each team, you know, is you kind of look at who's your team. So I'll talk a little bit more about that at all. But tomorrow is one of the teams, and I'm sorry that I chose this, but you know, Detroit was so bad. Has been so bad that long ago, it's been at least 10 years, if not more, that I just simply had to choose another team. So I looked at the list of all the teams, and I decided to pick the New England Patriots. And the reason was that Tom Brady was a former University of Michigan quarterback. You know, and so when I chose him, you know what I get from people? Oh, you mean that guy that cheated? They call it Deflategate and go, oh, come on. And so that's what you get sometimes when you choose certain teams. And, you know, that was a big thing this past week as far as New Orleans seemed, you know, that they got cheated out of the Super Bowl by one play that the referees missed the call. It was bad. It was really sad that that happened. But anyway, the Saints did not get to go to the Super Bowl just because of one important play. That's the kind of things that you want. Well, for a Christian, this can be good because it can always put a check on your attitude, can it? Sometimes you might get mad because of a football game or a basketball game. I'll go, it's just a game. And there are many more important things in life than a football game or a basketball game. But, you know, because I think we want to get some relaxation, really? That's relaxation? I don't know about that. So I don't know if we're totally looking at this thing right sometimes. You know, it's nice to vote for your team and all that, but I think what we're going to enjoy, obviously, is the fellowship we're going to have tomorrow. But you're going to see a team that things have changed over the years. I remember when I started getting back into hockey again and I started playing in Atlanta, I pulled out my old equipment. And I remember when I was in the dressing room, pieces were falling off of my equipment. It was so old. In fact, I was told by one guy and one referee that looked at me, he told me that my skates should be in the Smithsonian because I bought them in 1973. That's how old my skates are. But they're so protective that's why I still like them. But everything's lighter now. You know, they've got all the lighter equipment, but they really protect themselves. The quarterbacks wear this, you know, the things that even some of the cowboys do when they ride the bulls. They ride, I forget what that material is called now, but anyway, it's Kevlar. Kevlar it's called. But anyway, a lot of protective material. One thing especially that they've realized in football is a problem that is still going on right now. This has to do with concussions. Even though they wear these big helmets, now the rule is if you go head-to-head, that player has got to be checked out before he can go back out into the field again. So they've recognized that even when they wear a helmet, because it's such contact-to-contact, it can be devastating. There was a player named Mike Webster. He played for the Pittsburgh Steelers during their glory days when they won four Super Bowls. Terry Bradshaw was the quarterback, if you remember those teams. But Mike Webster was the center. And the center, what he does is after he hikes the ball, right away you're going helmet to helmet, probably with the opposing guy because you're trying to block. And so it was always a head-to-head. Mike Webster, even though he had four Super Bowl rings, he became homeless. He became a homeless man, and he was kind of totally forgotten until someone picked up on it and saw this man had a problem and related it to the days where he was playing football and all the head-to-head contact. That's when all these things started coming out about the dangers of playing this game. Now, when I played the game of hockey, you seldom ever got a head-to-head contact, but it was critical that I wore this piece of equipment. I was watching the Sports Center the other day, just some little clips that they had of some of the previous games, and there was one man who dropped to his knees right in front of his goalie, and somebody took a really hard shot, and they hit him. It missed the helmet, and it got him right on the side of the head where it wasn't covered, and they had to have about 12 stitches. I said, when that comes that hard at you, I'm surprised it wasn't worse than that. That could have really killed him when you get something that hard. But he went and got sewed up, and later on he came back out again. That's kind of typical of the game, too, because I remember all the years where I did wear a helmet. I didn't have a total face shield at the time, but I always did wear a helmet. In fact, I still have my outward mouthpiece. They don't even have outward mouthpieces anymore. So when I go out there with my helmet, I look like Darth Vader probably. And you know, but I've got protection. I've got my my teeth after all those years, and I know how many lost their teeth, and I almost did, because my own goalie took his stick as I was coming around the net, and he swooped up with his big goalie stick and went right through my mouth, but it took it up, so it didn't shatter my teeth out, and that's the only season I did not wear a mouthpiece. It was just sometimes like the cool thing to do. Sometimes if you wear an insert, it kind of hinders your breathing sometimes. So it's one season. After that, I went back to full equipment again. I took that and I said, well, that was a close one. Another time I got a stick right under my eye. It was that close. You can see the scar today. It was that close to taking my eye out. I didn't have a face shield on. I wear a face shield if I go out there now. But that one I remember. I was wearing a white jersey, and I don't want to pass anybody out here, but there was a lot of blood. And I came off and I went into the dressing room and I looked in the mirror and I go, oh, my face. You could see it was just open. And my dad comes in and goes, get a butterfly in there or get back out there again. That was the way the father is raised at that time to be tough kids. But anyway, I was able to see and value the importance of equipment, especially that helmet. 1967, there was a man in the pros that died because his head hit the ground. And he died. It still took the NHL about 3 more years before the helmet law became mandatory. They have to wear helmets now. They don't have to wear mouthpieces, so you'll see a lot of those guys without teeth, or they'll have false teeth, or whatever it is. But the necessity of that piece of equipment, if you've not done that before, sometimes it could be a little bit hard to relate. Let's go back to Ephesians chapter 6, and we'll take off from where Mr. Baker started here. Really appreciated you going and seeing the fight we have, because see, tomorrow will be a sports fight. You know, two games, and I really enjoy it when the players are good sportsmen. You know, sometimes they'll help even a member of the opposing team, they'll help him get up, they'll pat him, whatever it is. I like to see that instead of the antagonism and the fighting, because it's just a game. But this is a spiritual battle. And if you can recognize or at least see the importance of wearing one of these physical helmets, Paul talks about this in a spiritual way, because things are coming at you all of the time in pieces of information. You know, we could talk and maybe have a debate about oil and the pollution and what it's going to be like in the future, or what we can do now. There's all those kind of things, even all the pollution that's going into the air. I'm not able to take I'd have to go back and maybe Google this again, but all the forest fires that we had, how much pollution went up into the air because of all those trees? You know, and someone put up an argument for some kind of emissions. They says, you know, all the cattle that we have, they send out more gas than some of the other things. Just cattle. You know, and so, but we do realize that something wrong is going on. I can definitely see something is not right here. Because a lot of us, even our own brethren, are falling to different sicknesses. And you realize something's wrong. Yes, our land is being polluted. Our water is being polluted. Our air is being polluted. We're talking about GMOs now. We're talking about all kinds of different things that have made an impact on us. I don't know the answer to all this. I don't know if there can be a reversal. All I know is we have to do the best that we can do. And not just gone, well, you know, everything has got everything bad in it, so I'm not going to try. You can't stop trying. We have to do our part and do our best to take care of our bodies with the exercise, the proper nutrition, as best as we can. So we're all responsible for that because there's all this stuff being thrown at us. Oh, this is good. This is okay. And what's happening is some are taking their helmets off. And I'll go back to a specific idea here where it started from the very beginning. So he's talking about standing. Verse 13, he says, "Wherefore take to you the whole armor of God, that you may be able to withstand or resist in the evil day." You think we're in the evil day? I think that's easy to see. We are in an evil day. It's bad. You can see Satan's footprint because it's not just disagreements anymore. It's hatred. I don't know if I want to watch the State of the Union. It may be too sickening and too depressing to see what's going to happen. Very sad to see the state of what we're at, where we're at right now. But it says here, "Stand, therefore, having your loins girt about with truth, having on the breastplate of righteousness, the keeping of God's commandments and laws, having your feet shod with the preparation of the gospel of peace." What do we do? What's important to us? We're gearing to preach this gospel as a witness to all the nations. We're not trying to change things. Virtually, I don't know how anybody could. The odds are just so overwhelming that you could do anything about it. How are you going to change what just took place in New York? Anybody, how do you change that? You'd have to have a whole uprising of our government. And I just don't see that happening. I wish it would. But what's going to turn that around? It's not changed since 73, Roe versus Wade. One of the worst decisions you could ever make that sent this country going down was that. And how many millions upon millions upon millions of babies have been torn out of the womb in so many different ways. And it's just getting worse. And then they make a decision. Our Supreme Court, the highest authority in that sense, judicial authority in the land, agrees to have same-sex marriage. And now, if you're married, that's kind of weird. It's the other things that are rising up. All this is supposedly natural. Sorry, but I'm not taking my helmet off. It's wrong. It's bad. It's a sin. And that's the way God looks at it. But you're going to be called evil if you speak that way. You're going to be called, they use racist for everything now. And we see that happening, and it's going to get worse. You've got to wear your helmet, and you've got to see what is God saying, and stand firm with these things. That's why it says stand. "Above all, taking the shield of faith, wherewith you be able to quench or extinguish," it applies an offensive weapon, "all the fiery darts of the wicked." Those just hammer at us. I remember we were going through some of the different splits. Many have been through some different ones, not just one. Some have just gone through one, maybe two. Well, most here would be two. For us, it was at least, I think, three. But obviously, our main split was with our bigger organization, Worldwide Church of God. But you saw things that were happening at the time. And some don't realize that one of the big changes came all the way back to 1987, when they came out with a new truth on healing. I still have the Pastor General's report then. But it's like we're getting out this out really slow. But I saw the devastating effect it took on some brethren. Because one said, "I don't even know if God heals anymore." There's this one I was asked, I'm not sure why, unless God wanted me to witness this. But a man went in to be anointed by the elder. And the elder asked me to come in with him. And he was just inspired to ask the man. The man said, "You know, I had this affliction before, and now it's come back. After so many years, it's come back again." And for some reason, the elder said, "Well, you know, have you been praying regularly?" And the man said, "I've not prayed in like 4 months." And wow, it just shocked me. I'm going, "You don't pray? No wonder your faith is in question. You've got to stay close to God." Because all the things that we see around us with the sicknesses and the untimely deaths, does that bring any questions in your mind to wonder whether God heals or intervenes anymore? If you're wearing your helmet, you're going to realize God doesn't change. He's got his purpose. He still heals today. That sacrifice is still there, but it was like later on, more came out, and now the stripes of Jesus Christ were more for your spiritual healing. That God wasn't it wasn't important, the physical healing. It was all about spiritual. And that was the biggest dish of bologna that was given to the church, because it created, all of a sudden, the faith of the church started going on. Where is God anymore with all these things that were taking place? The kingdom is here now, was one of the pronouncements early in the early 90s. And we thought, well, if the kingdom is here now, we don't want any part of it. This certainly is not God's kingdom now. We see that in the future. But all of a sudden, the born again became another issue. You're born again. All these different issues that started adding up to the point you get to the God is. If you remember the God is ... book, God is. And that certainly it wasn't at all what God is. If anything, I said God is not, this is not what God is. It went back into the Trinity theory again. So that's what, and how many people, brethren, took their helmet off? How many people took the helmet off? Because I remember people and ministers that would tell Jeannie and I, you know, I was questioning that stuff for a while, and I prayed that God would help me to understand it. And all of a sudden, at least two of them said there was this bright light that went off. And all of a sudden, they understood it. They accepted it all. And I think what God does, he goes, if that's what you want, if that's what you're going to pray to understand something false, you pray that you understand the truth, not what anybody writes or says. You go back to your Bible, the same thing, and prove it, whether it's there or not. Do not take that helmet off. And some people took it off, and they accepted these ideas and these thoughts that came out. And so you had circular ideas of things that took place throughout all those things. I was wondering, as we dealt with this, and I know you know this now, your helmet is on here. If I would ask you the question, who's the head of the church today? What's the Bible say? Jesus Christ is the head of the church. That's it. Yes, we have physical corporations, but that doesn't take place of what God says. I don't come between you and Jesus Christ. That temple curtain was rent in two. You've got access through Jesus Christ to the Father. You don't have to go through anybody. You don't have to go through the ministry. So I remember this thing that was painted for years in our earlier organization. Then later on, it kept coming back, this idea of government. Yes, God's got his government. But it's not the government that says, I'm telling you what to do. I'm telling you how to run your life. What did Christ say how he runs government? He says, I'm your Lord and Master, but I'm he who serves. That's what it's there for, not to pound down on people. And if you don't agree with them and you get fired, that's not the appropriate form of government. The helmet's got to stay on, and we've got to go back to our Bibles and pray that God's discernment, the godly discernment, will be with us always. So this is what this is speaking about. You know, I would hope, because I've heard so many stories, and I certainly have mine too, but sometimes I enjoy when somebody gives me their story on some kind of intervention that took place when God was there with them. This week, it happened to my wife. She said that there's a huge stairway at where she works, and she felt her body going forward. Her boot caught the carpet, and she was going down, and she felt something that brought her back again. I mean, when you're like that, you're going down. It wasn't that she just felt a force that brought her back straight again. These things happen a lot to God's people. And sometimes it'd be nice if we'd write our stories down of, hey, this is kind of, I think it was Outdoor Life that had a little section, this is what happened to me. Some of the hunter stories and things. The Christians really got a lot of stories too. We need to remember that so our helmet doesn't come off, so we never go, God's not there. He's always there. He promises he always will be there. And we got to keep that helmet on. Now let's go back here to Genesis chapter 3. Because we're going to consider, for instance, why the helmet? You know, Ephesians 6, verse 17 says, take the helmet of salvation. Why a helmet, though? What does it protect? Now, consider this, what happens when one has an operation where the control center is knocked out. For instance, take your computer with all of its incredible functions and go ahead and short-circuit the hard drive. What do you have? Nothing. Do you? Nothing. It's just a piece of plastic or whatever put together. You knock out that hard drive and that computer is worthless. The human brain contains the control center for every nephesh, for every soul which God has created. It's a marvelous wonder, which is surrounded by a protective shell, yet it can still be knocked out by a small blow. I remember the time where I was a teen in somebody's backyard, and just like dumb teens, we were taking 5-pound weights and we were tossing them back and forth to each other, just kind of seeing how long we could heave them. I thought there were only two. I found out that there were three, because the next time I went to pick up the next weight, the other one hit me right in the head. Now, I've never been knocked out before. I've never been put out. I don't know, except for sleeping. I don't know what that's like. Has anybody here ever been knocked out? So we've got some people that have been knocked out. Also, I remember, I did see when they said you see stars in the cartoons, they have things dancing around their mind. I do remember seeing these spots, these white spots, or they call it seeing stars. And I remember it too, it threw my balance off. I was like this. I didn't go to a doctor. Thankfully, nothing after that, I don't think, happened. I don't think at all, but anyway, you never know sometimes. But that was a tough blow. I've never been dealt something like that before. Even all those years of hockey I went through, I never hit my head that hard. But I saw what can happen when that takes place. You know, it's also the area for a true Christian that houses the Spirit of God. You take out the control center and you'll have nothing but a lifeless body. Adam and Eve removed this piece of equipment long ago. Let's take a look here in Genesis 3, verse 1. I want to focus less on the actual physical piece of equipment, but I want to understand why Paul used the analogy and how critical this is, especially in our day today, because you get so much information. Is it accurate information? Is it correct information? And how do we deal with that? Genesis 3, verse 1, let's see. Now the serpent, Satan, was more subtle, he was crafty than any beast of the field which the Lord God had created. He said to the woman, "Yes, has God said that you shall not eat of every tree of the garden?" Do you see this approach now? It's easy for us to say. He knew it. What are you asking her for? He knew exactly what was done. But now, just a question. Has that really, you've always believed that? He's going for a death blow. He's going for an attack on the control center. So the woman says, "We may eat of the fruit of the trees of the garden, but of the fruit of the tree which is in the midst of the garden, God has said, you shall not eat of it, neither shall you touch it, lest you die." And the serpent said, "You shall not surely die." That's happened in our lifetime. God says there's healing. Well, he doesn't know. He's really not concerned about our physical healing. Did you take your helmet out and get fed that line of baloney? Because it's absolutely not true. You can look at the scriptures and see how God is our healer. Just because something doesn't work out according to our will does not mean it's not God's will. But this is how he works. He says, "God knows that in the day you eat, then your eyes will be opened. You'll be like gods, knowing good and evil." And when the woman saw that the tree was good for food, that it was pleasant to the eyes, a tree to be desired to make one wise, she took off her helmet and ate the fruit and did eat. And gave it to her husband, and he also took his helmet off, and he ate. He bought the lie. You would say this would be so clear, but Satan was crafty. He was subtle. He knew how to give it. He knew how to give it the approach. And the eyes of them were both opened, and they knew they were naked. You know what happened here? They were reeling from the blow. They just got a blow to the head, and they were reeling. They sewed fig leaves together, made themselves apron. Why? They knew that. What was wrong with that? They were naked before that. And God walked in the garden. He was their creator. I was thinking of that when somebody does a comparison. You know, there was a comparison by a comedian that everybody was kind of telling them their stories around the table. And you had a guy like Neil Armstrong that would say, "I walked on the moon." I mean, who can beat that? Well, if God's sitting at your table, Christ would be going, "Yeah, and I made the moon." I mean, how can you beat that one? So understanding, again, who our God is that we worship is so critically important to understanding and keeping that helmet and wearing it. So they heard the voice of the Lord God walking in the garden in the cool of the day. Adam and his wife hid themselves. This doesn't even make sense. They were dizzy. So they hid themselves from the presence of the Lord God among the trees. And the Lord called to Adam and says, "Where are you?" He responded, "I heard your voice in the garden and I was afraid because I was naked and I hid myself." You're thinking, if you looked at that as a Christian today, you would hopefully go, that does not make sense. Why would you be afraid when God is walking in the garden? Is it like a child you knew you took from the cookie jar? But you know, Paul puts that in 2 Timothy 1 verse 6, stir up the gift of God that is in you. The Spirit of God is not a spirit of fear, but it's of power and of love, and it's of sound mind. That's the Spirit of God. So when you get fear, you may have taken off your helmet. God says a Christian should never fear. It should not be a part of our lives. But we get challenged and we get tested on that. So he hid himself. Verse 11, God said, who told you that you were naked? Have you eaten of the tree whereof I commanded that you should not eat? And the man said, now this is really a dizzy one. The woman whom you gave with me, she gave me the tree and I did it. What if this is perfect? How many have blamed someone else? I know the spouses have had to do that, this. You know, where's my this or where's my that? Well, you took it. I didn't take it. There's always a blame going somewhere, isn't there? Someone is blaming somebody. That shows you that Satan is around. See, when I see what's going on, whether it was the Kavanaugh hearing, if you saw any of those hearings, Satan was present there. You could see it in all the accusations. It was horrible. No matter how you look at it, the way it was even done, the way it's done today, it's horrible because there's hate. It's not just disagreements, there's actual hatred. People hate people. There's your footprint of Satan that's right there. So he blames it. Notice his dizzy state of mind, right in tune with the accuser of the brethren. And the Lord said to the woman, what's this that you have done? The woman said, he did it. He deceived me and I ate. So to this day, one can remember the phrase, the devil made me do it. What should Eve have done? She should have listened. She shouldn't have took off her helmet. God gave her specific, clear instructions. Don't touch it. Don't eat it. For the day you eat of will die, he goes, that's not true. Keep your finger here. You don't have to turn here. James 4, verse 7, it says, submit yourselves therefore to God. Put on the helmet. Wear the helmet. Resist the devil. Use the shield. And he will flee from you. He'll see that strength and power that only comes from God himself. So verse 14, it says, the Lord God said to the serpent, because you've done this, you are cursed above all cattle and above every beast of the field. Upon your belly you will go, and dust you will eat all the days of your life. Did you notice this scripture? I thought it is interesting as we were talking about this in the past couple of weeks. But, you know, it's interesting that he's portrayed as a snake. But when you look at what Satan was, when you go back to Ezekiel 28, you know, Satan was known as the covering cherub. And if you remember that the cherub had the four faces, very unusual, but God's not changed the appearance of a cherub. A cherub is a cherub to this day. There are cherubs. They're angelic beings, but this specified it. The faces that the cherubim had were that of an eagle, a lion. It says a man that could be an ape. We'll find out. But if it is a man, then that's how God made it. But the main face, do you know what the main face was of a cherub? I just said there was a lion, there was an eagle, possibly a man or an ape. What was the other one? I'll give you a hint. What did Israel do when they came out of Egypt? What's the first thing that they made? A cow. It was the face of a cow or a calf. I mean, what happened to Israel? They all took most of them took their helmets off, didn't they? You know, make us, this was perfect. This was Satan getting a real victory. Because it was his main face. So they come out and they make a calf. This was perfectly satanic. So it's possible, we don't know. We have to go back and see the video when we get into the kingdom to see how this really, Genesis is so, there's so much information that's not given. It's not important for salvation, but it's just very interesting. What form did Satan appear in? Because now God cursed him. And said, now upon your belly you will go. So he was a serpent before, or did God curse him in that sense, even metaphorically, to do that? Not really sure, but we can't miss the main point here. Because it's interesting how mankind has picked up with this. Because if you remember the Jungle Book, the cartoon, hilarious. Really, the characters that were done at that time, there was a snake. Do you remember the snake in Jungle Book? His name was Ka, K-A-A. And in the cartoon, the voiceover was Terry Thomas. And the snake is shown with a split teeth that his tongue would come out of. And Terry Thomas had split teeth. It was just the perfect character for Terry Thomas to play. But there's some of the same things. You know what the song of Ka was? Trust in me, trust in me. Isn't that perfect? That's exactly what Satan wants us to do, to trust what he has to say. And he's deceived the entire world. That's what Revelation says, the deceiver of the entire world. And they have no idea. They think that they're smart in all the things that they say. Verse 15 of Genesis 3 says, I'll put enmity between you and the woman, between your seed and her seed. It will bruise your head, and you will bruise his heel. So it spoke of the bruising of the heel, referring to the time where Jesus Christ. Now, what was the bruising of the head? That's a death blow. It'll be interesting to see how God wraps this up, isn't it, in the future. So here you find the first prophecy containing the knowledge, though, of the future of Jesus Christ, the bruising of the head. So how would you like to have, though, the supernatural protection wrapped so tightly around your head that it would safeguard your mind from every mental assault? Well, some may not realize it, but if you're a child of God, you've already been given the safeguard. It's the matter of putting it on. There's something you've got to do with the equipment. And when I went out there to play a hockey game, there may have been a piece of equipment I could have possibly gotten away with. That would be my shoulder pads. You know, I would have to go down on the ice really hard and break my shoulder, but that's what those pads. But there were certain pieces you were never, obviously you have to have skates. Well, how does that relate to us spiritually? We've always believed, I believe everybody here does. One time I remember there were different choices of churches that you could go to. I remember there was a very nice man. He preached basically the truth, but felt that the gospel had been preached, that Mr. Armstrong had done that, and now that was over. I read my Bible, and I don't see it says that. So somebody took off that vital piece of equipment and preaching the gospel as a witness, and then the end will come. Herbert Armstrong has been dead for a long time. People have not heard this message, and we're going to continue to preach that message because it's a vital part of what we do and what we share to the people of this world. Even if God's not going to call them right now, I believe he'll call them to remember that gospel message that's gone out there. We've got to wear it, though. We've got to put it on. But, you know, Paul deals extensively with this. And he spoke about this helmet of salvation, but he put it from the viewpoint of a Roman helmet, which I thought interesting. If you do some research back there, you find lots of different kinds of Roman helmets, depending on the time. But if you get these, you see the ones, if you saw Ben-Hur or the Ten Commandments, and you see the Roman soldiers, if you were a captain or a general, sometimes your helmet would be decked out with more feathers, you know, be more elaborately decked out. Some of those helmets, by the way, had different figures on it. They had different paintings. The soldier valued the helmet, and I try to bring it up to today. So let's look at today. Now, this team is not in the Super Bowl tomorrow, but some people, I'm not going to give you a hint. Here's the hint. If you look at their helmet, they've got a one star on their helmet. Does anybody know who that team is? You all know it, don't you? Everybody, but most would look at that and go, that's Dallas. It's called the Lone Star State. That's why they have a star on it. The Detroit Lions have a lion. And I thought it was very interesting when the Lions played the Saints in one of the playoff games. You know, you never would really hope that the Lions would beat the Saints and overcome them. But anyway, there you get these different pictures which denote the different teams. So I said, what would your helmet look like as a spiritual Christian? What would you put on it? You know, some of the college teams, the coaches will put little stickers or give the team stickers. If they played a good game or made a special play, you'll see some of the college people with a lot of stickers. So if you see the whole helmet covered with stickers, this guy played a lot of good games. So it denoted something. What would your helmet, what would you put on your helmet? And I went through and I kind of got a humorous one, but I was kind of, what would define me as a saint? I go, what if you looked at my helmet and on the side you saw a loaf of bread? I mean, wouldn't that be interesting? A loaf of bread. A first fruit, right? Didn't the wave loaf symbolize these are the first fruits? Now, you could put something else. You know, a lot of modern-day Christianity today would put a cross on. That's how you know they would consider themselves to be Christians. What would you put on yours? You know, and think about it in that way. What defines you? Would you put Ten Commandments? You could put Ten Commandments on there. You know, some of us have plaques in our house. You use that and say, that defines me. That's in a sense, who I am. That's what I try to follow, who I try to obey. You know, but we all have our helmets. What is yours composed of? What's the importance on always keeping that on? In fact, not only that, but your display. It's there as a display. Because your helmet's going to define yourself in your workplace, in your school, wherever you go, because people are going to say, they're wearing something, and it's elaborate, and it's very different from anybody else's because of what they do. It's how they talk. It's how people know that they won't lie. It's how people know that they don't have corrupt communication. They don't curse like anybody else does. They react very calmly. And so people are going to see that, and they're going to notice that. That's how you display that, just like the Roman generals did as well. I wanted to read a little bit from, we have an article back in the Life, Hope, and Truth section. It's written by Dave Johnson. I believe this is the elder that's out in the Fort Worth area. It's called the Armor of God, the Helmet of Salvation. He says here, when a soldier of the Apostle Paul's day suited up for battle, the helmet was the last piece of the armament to be put in place. In fact, without the helmet, a soldier would be so vulnerable that the rest of the armor would be of little use. Paul's statement, take the helmet of salvation, is the shortest description given to any pieces of armor. It required almost no explanation in terms of value. The Roman helmet, known as the Galia, could vary quite a bit in design, since mass manufacturing didn't exist at the time, and each helmet was created individually. There was also some variation in the helmet design during the life of the empire. Since the helmets were made of metal, though poorer soldiers or soldiers from the early days of the empire may have had leather helmets fortified with pieces of metal. And when the pro teams started back in the 50s and 60s, they actually had leather-type helmets as well before they came out with the newer types. Helmets usually had cheek plates to guard against blows to the face, a metal piece to the back to protect against blows to the back of the neck. In addition, during the first century, the helmets began to include a brow ridge to provide protection to the eyes. Now he talks about salvation. Salvation means being saved, receiving deliverance. When Paul says in Romans chapter 5, he says, God demonstrates his own love toward us, and that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. Much more than having been now justified by his blood, we will be saved from wrath through him. For if we were enemies, we were reconciled to God through the death of his son. Much more, having been reconciled, we'll be saved by his life. That's that piece of equipment that's so critical. Again, this goes on pretty long, but just as a piece of that to see how Paul valued this, and how you can go back and see some of the history here as well. So it'd be very hard, though, when you saw the plumage and anything like that, it would be very hard to walk past one of the soldiers without taking note of him. So it was those helmets that really made the Roman soldiers so noticeable. So when you walk with this piece of equipment, and it was a defensive weapon designed to save a man's head, that's exactly what's going to happen to you when you wear it. If you don't walk in all that the salvation entails, then you may feel the brunt of the enemy's axe when it comes to attack your mind and steal your victory. And you've all been witnesses. We've all seen it incredulously. Many of us ask, how could you do that? How could these people be with us for so long and have these beliefs and come to the holy days and believe everything that we do? And now you go back, some will go back on Facebook, and we have friends that we went to college with, and it's gone. It's gone. Oh, you keep those holy days still, some of them will say. Some of you still might be friends, you know, with some of those, remembering some of the friendships that we built. But it's gone. The helmet came off. They bought the lies. And they were smooth as they came out. You know, it was said back at headquarters that, the main headquarters in California, that we can't give this to them all at once. It'd be way too much. We've got to give it in little increments. Put it out a little bit here, and then tell them that we're in charge. That's all you got to do is look to me, and everything will be okay. Wow, I tell you what, once that's said, if that's said, the guard goes up right away. My salvation is not through anybody else. It's my responsibility to find out if that is true or if it's not true. And I'm going to go back to my Bible. I'm not going to Google many cases unless there's references to a Bible and what it really says. We're working on that all the time. We're being challenged all the time. And what's said about this and what's said about that? Oh, that's good for you. A little thing came out some time ago that says, oh, by the way, but, you know, what this has got, it's got gelatin in it. They go, oh, you know, by the time that's refined and it goes through the process, it's not pork anymore. And I'm thinking, how do you do that? Is this like an I Dream of Jeannie thing? You put it through some kind of process and somebody at the very end goes, bam, it's not pork anymore. I don't care how much you refine it. If you refine pork, it's still pork after the refining process. And actually went through and saw the refining process. If you saw the globs of what they do to separate certain things, that's still a part of it. You know, if you cut my hand off, that's still me. It's my hand. You know, it hasn't changed at all. It's not my wife's. It's mine. And it's the same. That might sound simplistic, but that's how simplistic it is. It doesn't change. It's still there. And see, because of some of these thinking here, well, it doesn't everything kind of have bad stuff in it? You know, we probably accidentally eat bad stuff all the time, but that doesn't mean we should. You know, if we see something, a lot of us ask when we go out to certain restaurants, which is a nice and appropriate thing to do. You don't have to feel embarrassed. You can do it. What are these made of? Are these made of this? And we found one restaurant we went actually changed the menu. And I'm glad that somebody actually asked because now they're working with lard again. So there's nothing wrong with asking. Because you're looking to do the best thing, and that can carry over to even more spiritually important things as well. So anyway, the enemy is going to hack at your foundation, telling you that forgiveness, healing, deliverance, preservation, and soundness of mind were not really a part of what Christ did through his sacrifice and resurrection. You know something? By the time the enemy is finished with your mind, the only thing he's going to leave you with is hopelessness. Have you felt that way? Have you ever felt hopeless? I think we've all been attacked by it. But thankfully, if you have and you recognize it, that's very important that you do. If you would give me a call and go, Mr. Evans, everything's been down. This has been going on. This person's sick. This person has died. And I just feel hopeless. I go, well, good. You've recognized something. What? That you feel hopeless. Well, what do I do about it? What do you think you should do about it? You go to your Father in heaven and tell him and talk to him and say, I feel hopeless now and I don't want to feel hopeless. I felt that. It's like getting the spiritual wind knocked out of you. And I've talked to another minister. It's like getting the zeal knocked out of you. And I remember going back to that minister and said, sir, I've got my zeal back. I don't know when it happened. It wasn't just like this light popped out of me, but all of a sudden you may have the same problems and be surrounded by all kinds of bad things, but your outlook is totally different because now you've just asked God to give you more of his spirit that's going to show you a picture in a total different way. You've kept your helmet on. You didn't let Satan take it off to where he can destroy you because that's what hopelessness can do. Sometimes people get to the point where they just don't want to live anymore, and I've heard people say that to me. I've thought about taking my own life at times. I'm going, oh no, if you can see Satan's footprint in that attack right there, that is nobody but Satan that wants you to destroy yourself and to be so hopeless. There's answers to this, but this is Paul talking about keeping that equipment on. If you face the adversary without your helmet, that's very foolish. That'd be like me going out and skating and not putting my helmet on. That'd be a very silly thing to do. So the devil knows that if he can seize your mind and fill it with lies, he can begin to operate from this lofty position in life. He can try to manipulate your emotions, send signals even of sickness and disease. You know, some people had figured that out, some that have got cancers, and were so sad they started watching humorous things. I think one guy started to watch the Three Stooges. And I look back at that can be some of the dumbest stuff to watch sometimes. But I remember when he had this clam chowder, and there was actually a clam in there. And so when he put a little oyster cracker in there, the clam came up and he grabbed his cracker. It was the silliest thing, but I'm laughing my head off at watching what he does. So then he sends a little hook and puts it on one of those things. He starts fishing with it. And the thing comes out and grabs it again. He starts to pull on it, and the soup is going all over the place. Just the dumbest thing, but it just makes you crack up. And everybody can get different types of humor sometimes. But the point is, how long has it been since you've laughed? Now, I love the laughs, and it's been a while for me on this type of laugh. But I remember one time laughing so hard that your stomach starts to hurt. And you don't know why you're laughing. It might be something really silly, but you just got this jitter of humor and laughter that comes out of you. I love that kind of laugh. Just to know, wow, look at, maybe it's a release of emotion in a sense in that way as well. But how many of us have really laughed? You know, Satan's going to really try to work on getting us down. Now, there are several actions that we can take to help this keep this helmet on. I'd like to go through some points today. Points to keeping our helmet fastened and functioning, to keep our mind clear. The important thing on God, because I'll tell you right now, this world is going to get worse. We live in the greatest country probably ever, and yet we see the evils so much more clearly because we've got the media, we've got social media, and your TV that you can turn directly in onto your news programs and other things and magazines and radio programs. And it's, how many have heard good news? It's just hard to ever hear any good news. So the first point is renewing our minds. Renew our minds. Let's look at renewing our minds back in Romans 12. Romans 12. And isn't this what we're trying to prep for anyway when it comes to the Passover? Is this not what we're trying to do? Is renewing our minds, going back to look at our original purpose for making our commitment anyway? To evaluate and see where do we stand right now? And to realize sometimes we may have gotten off in our thinking. You know, Israel was always criticized. Two things that God really came down on Israel for. Number one was their idolatry. The second one was their backsliding. They kept backsliding. Sometimes a Christian can do that too. We can start to take our equipment off and we start to backslide and go the other way. Start to pick up maybe some of the old bad habits that we overcame before. That can happen to a Christian. Romans chapter 12. Verse 1 here, it says, I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service. That's not even above and beyond. We come before God at Passover, we should be way ahead of that. Not just our reasonable service, but I'm talking about a really classic Passover. Wouldn't that be awesome? You are just ready to go, thankful, and you come with that attitude. You know, I'm doing the best that I can, God. You know I'm trying. I still need more of your help. So you've got all those elements that are so important. But it says, don't be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. That's a lot of work sometimes. It's not always easy, but the information is out there, and it's in your Bibles to find out what God wants for us. So old ideas, opinions, worldviews must be replaced with God's truth, continually to wash out the lies, the filth, the confusion, and take on a look at it from God's perspective. God, I don't care about seeing it from your perspective or you from mine. I'm trying to help us to see it from God's perspective. And you can see from what he says. The second point, reject doubts that arise from circumstances. You know, human beings are sensory creatures. What we cannot fathom with our five senses, we kind of tend to disregard. And if we allow them to, circumstances sometimes would convince us that God doesn't really love us or that his word is not true. I can share that with you. The lowest part of my life, and now I'm glad that God allowed me to go through it. It was horrible at the time. It was the time my wife was 3 days in labor. And I thought that God left me. I was on my face on the floor appealing for God's intervention, and it wasn't happening. And finally, we had to transport. And the sick feeling that I had, God, where are you? Getting to the hospital and going through that and seeing them pull out the, I call them salad tongs, because it was a lower forceps delivery. She just couldn't push anymore. She was so weak. And once they pulled out those forceps, my head went down at her head, just at the table. I go, I'm done. It was the empty, most empty feeling that you can ever have. And from that point on, God showed me how he was always there. He had never left me. This was the footprints in the sand guy. Whoever did that came up with a great concept, because I looked at that and go, that was me. And the one thing that came about from the worst time of my life is I learned, I don't care what the circumstances are, but I will never doubt God again. Because if I do, you might as well just throw him out. You might just don't believe in him then. I refuse that. I totally don't understand the fullness of God's love and power and mercy for us. But this I do know. I believe what he says. And he says, I'll never leave you. Now, you can leave him, but he says, I'll never leave you. So when I see things sometimes that may seem to think, well, God, where are you in this? No, he's there. He doesn't take vacations. He doesn't turn his head and go, oh, I missed that one. He doesn't miss things. That's not the God that we serve. So once you reject all those other doubts, the helmet stays on. Hebrews chapter 11. So now you can choose, with that helmet on, you can choose to believe what appears to be impossible. And you've got chapters of this, of testimonies that are written about this. Hebrews chapter 11, in verse 6, it says, without faith it's impossible to please him. For he who comes to God must believe that he is, and he is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. How do you diligently seek him? Prayer, Bible study, fasting, meditation, that's seeking God. So why do you say, do you think, you know, after all those tools that we know, are we just waiting till atonement before we fast? I mean, the Pharisees of the day, they said, you know, I fast how many times? And I don't know if it was a 24-hour fast for them. It may have been just during the night or whatever. So that's what a Pharisee would do and then proclaim to do a fast. We do 24-hour fasts to the best of our ability. So is that diligently seeking him? Yes, it is. You're going to have a really good Passover if you choose to fast more often. But we have to. But that's going to help us to reject those doubts. 1 Peter chapter 1. 1 Peter chapter 1 and verse 8. Well, we can go back to verse 6. In this you greatly rejoice, though now for a little while, if need be, you have been grieved by various trials, that the genuineness of your faith, being much more precious than gold that perishes, though it's tested by fire, may be found to praise, honor, and glory at the revelation of Christ. He'll say, you know, you went through, I allowed you to go through some different trials to test you and to prove you and to make you stronger, and you never doubted me. I mean, wouldn't that be the greatest feeling in the world? That whatever happens in your life or around you that you refuse to ever doubt. If you watch the movie that I had a video on this from Abraham, I don't know or remember if he totally said this, I'd have to go back, but in the movie they added this portion on because you saw all the trials that God led him through. Do you know when he told the Pharaoh that his wife was the sister, and then it went into some more detail of what possibly could have happened. Even Abraham was not a happy camper after he made that decision. But after all that he went through, he get to a place where his servant says, well, how about if we do it this way? And Abraham goes, nope. He goes, I have learned I will never doubt God again. And you're kind of going, yes, that's what I want to do. That's what I want to be like. Because if you never doubt God, then Satan can't get to your mind. He can't get you down to feeling hopeless because you know it's just a matter of time, whether it's in this life or the next time. But God is coming. This is going to change. That makes me a happy camper. I can't change this garbage going on in our government. But guess what? If I stay strong and you stay strong, you will. You will. And there's not going to be Democrats and Republicans anymore. And for us, there's not going to be term limits. So, but everything that we judge by is not going to be by our ideas either. It's going to be everything that we're training right now. All those ideas that come from God. And we'll also call to be servants. So we've got to reject those doubts. It says, in whom you, having not seen, you love. Though now you do not see him, yet believing, you rejoice with joy inexpressible and full of glory, receiving the result of your faith, the salvation of your souls. That's what our destiny is. So it's important that we reject the doubts, and you do that by keeping that helmet on. The third is, keep a kingdom of God perspective. And that's what I just said. When you focus in on that and what our opportunities are going to be, it really makes this life worth living because you realize nothing really changes, does it? In fact, as you get older, things hurt more. That's not going to change. It's just, it'll probably get worse. If you've got like a really sore knee, you know, it's just always been there. You know, thankfully, I noticed when I walk, I could never sneak into my house when I was a teen. Because I would get to a certain point, and there was a piece of cartilage in my knee that will always crack, and my mom would hear it. I was trying to straighten it as I walk in so I wouldn't bend it, but somewhere there, there it is. What are you doing home so late? Oh, man. You know, and so these things in our bodies, as you know, it's not looking good here. But it is looking good. It is looking good. Some of us here just decide to replace stuff. I know that makes it a little bit easier. But you know something, you realize the vanity of that too, don't you? Because something else is going to hurt now. It's just the wheel goes, it's just the circle of life just goes right around. You know something? And we can laugh at it. Because we realize that's the way God made us. And when you keep the kingdom of God perspective, everything we do now, is the value is going to be when Christ returns. It happens when life crashes in around us, we remember to look up, to keep our eyes on that can help us to weather life storms. If it doesn't have eternal significance, it doesn't really matter. Let's go to Hebrews chapter 12. Hebrews chapter 12. Now, it's interesting, we can go out into this world. I've got to temper even more the news that I listen to because it's just so negative and discouraging. But, you know, when you come to services and you get rejuvenated by what God says, but then you got 6 other days where Satan's just going to pound at you. Wear you down more. I can't think of anything more value than God's Sabbath day. So Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 2. It says, looking to Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the sacrifice, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. How many years did they have to think about this before it really happened? It was much more than what we go through, obviously. Many, many hundreds, thousands of years before it actually came up to the point where Jesus Christ did that. Because you get about 4,000 in the Old Testament, right around that 2,000. We're nearing about 6,000 years of God's, of so-called man's creation. So he had 6,000 years to think about what was, or to 4,000 to think about what was going to happen to him. Because that was the plan from that time on. And you get to that point, how did he look at it? After all those years of knowing exactly in detail what was going to happen, he was going to be beaten beyond belief, bloody beyond belief, and all the crown of thorns, the shamefulness that took place, and finally the sacrifice. And how did he look at it before? Yeah, he had to draw near to God. He prayed for that strength that God gave to him. It strengthened him. But it says for the joy that was set before him. Now let's bring it down to right now. Here we are in surrounded by all these things that we see are going to happen. And you know it's going to get worse. But I don't want to go around every day and go, oh, it's going to get worse. It's going to get worse. It's going to just get worse. I don't want to live life like that. You can still be happy. But you can really be happy if you're focused in on beyond this. If you hear that piece of news that tells you that this Democrat just did this or that Republican just did that or that governor just made that, and it kind of hits you and gets you down, you're going to think this way. I get to change that. And it's not going to be too long before we do. That's the kingdom of God perspective. The last one here is trust in God and stand in awe. Trust in God and stand in awe. I'll just read this one to you. Psalm chapter 73 says, whom have I in heaven but you? Besides you, I desire nothing on earth. So the helmet is most effective is when we treasure what it represents. And now we can thwart anything that Satan throws at us. Let's go to Proverbs chapter 3. And after this, I'm going to tell you, in closing, that there is a time to take the helmet off. The helmets are going to come off, by the way. But Proverbs chapter... Proverbs chapter 3, verse 5. One of our favorites. Start at verse 3. Let not mercy and truth forsake you. Bind them around your neck. Write them on the table of your heart. See all the metaphors that it's talking about? And how the intent of the metaphor is to get us to understand this deeper of what God wants for us. So find favor and high esteem in the sight of God and man. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not to your own understanding. In some of your ways acknowledge Him. I always throw it out there like that because I want to make the point. Because sometimes we just do it sometimes. But it says all the times. When you've ever got critical decisions in your life, I tried to pass this down to some of our young kids sometimes, because I remember what it was like to get bullied. I was bullied in junior high. I remember that. By a guy that I found out was being abused by his father, and he was taking out on everybody else. So you had to watch the way that you walked around this guy. But you know what you can do? Our kids have got access to God just like we do. Why can't we get on our knees with our kids and appeal to God to help that intervention? And to help God say, this is what I'm going through. Can our kids not appeal for any question that they might have or any concern that they might ever have and know that they can trust in God for deliverance? I think it's important that we teach them that we're helping them to understand the importance of putting their helmet on as well. Because they've got to battle more than ever. I can't believe what it would be like in the schools today. It wasn't that bad in our times. The drugs were just starting to come in. They just changed the rule that they weren't going to try to fight the smoking anymore. So they put an outside smoking section that they just go and smoke. If you're going to smoke, you can't stop them. But then the marijuana started coming in right after I left in 75, and things started getting worse. Now it's heroin and so many other even worse drugs than that Satan is killing. That's Satan's footprint. So we've got to learn to trust in God always in everything that we do. So when we please the Lord, when that's our supreme delight, then we eliminate a lot of Satan's lures and render his evil, the suggestions, powerless. Now, in closing here, when's the time to take it off? The Bible even talks about that. You actually have to take this off to put it on. That's the hint. Maybe a little twister here, a little teaser. You have to take it off before you can put this on. What are you and I given at the time that we receive our reward? How many times? Let's go to 1 Corinthians 9. Because this relates to now. Somebody tomorrow is going to win the Super Bowl, and they're going to get their Super Bowl ring and their Vince Lombardi trophy. Somebody's going to win the Stanley Cup. It's very interesting how different they are. This thing is so big and because they put everyone's name on it. So it grows in tiers sometimes. But there's the Stanley Cup. They carry that around and then somebody wins it probably the next year. That's how it is. Paul puts it this way in 1 Corinthians 9, verse 25. Everyone that strives for the mastery is temperate in all things. Now they do it to obtain a corruptible crown, but we do it to obtain an incorruptible crown. That's where that comes into play. I can't see God putting that over our helmet. Here's why. By the time you become full spirit beings, there's not a necessity to wear a helmet anymore. It will be impossible for you to be deceived. Why would you want to? You know, if there's any doubt there, when you become a full spirit being, part of the God family, would you ever want to backslide and go after you've had a lifetime of seeing this filth? The Bible calls it returning to your vomit. You want that for dinner? That's pretty sickening, isn't it? That's why God said that, to see how sickening it would. Christ was not tempted to sin. Some would put, like, he was some kind of weakling. Satan puts this in front of him. I go, oh, I'm really hungry here. Oh, really? He understood this battle that he was fighting. And this was like the test that you were going to take that was no brainer. What do you say? You can see the answers he gave. He wasn't, was he hungry? Absolutely. After 40 days and 40 nights, he was hungry. Do you think he went before that test and said, man, I tell you what, I could do this right now. That's all I got to do is yield to him. When he knew the entire story. No, whoever does that pulls the power of our God down to a human. Yes, he was a human being, but he had the fullness of God's Spirit. He was not going to fail. He was a guarantee from the foundation of the world that this was going to be something that would be locked and secured. And when you receive your crown, you take the helmet off and God puts the crown on. Now you got a different symbol on your head that reflects and shows other people you're a first fruit. So you take off the helmet maybe he's got the piece of bread on it, and now you put on the crown. So you don't have to wear that bread all the time. James chapter 1, verse 12. James 1, verse 12. How many times it says this? Revelation says, behold, I come quickly. Hold fast that you have. Let no man take your crown. James chapter 1, verse 12. Blessed is the one that who endures temptation. For when he is tried, he shall receive a crown of life. 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 4. When the chief shepherd shall appear, you'll receive a crown of glory that doesn't fade away. It's not going to be the Vince Lombardi trophy. You'll get to wear it for eternity. Wow. Can you imagine that? You know, if you watch any of the old movies, like we were going back and looking at the history of Mary, Queen of Scots, and you saw how the dynasties at that time, the only thing they were trying to do, and you go back to the days of the kings of Israel, they tried to preserve their kingship. So they had a lot of kids. And then they killed everybody else. They killed everybody else's kids because it would preserve what they had. So that's the story of mankind. Preserving what you've got, because it's a crown of glory from a man. So you go back to England. These were stories of the modern day, you know, later day Israelites that God allowed to put in a place, whether Scotland or England or whatever. And the only way that they preserve is cutting off somebody's head and hanging it up like they did to William Wallace or someone else. That's the story of mankind. See, ours is secure, and it's going to be forever, and no kind of government will ever be able to take that away. That's what your and I destiny is. You know, it'll be fun to watch the game in fellowship tomorrow. I really don't care who wins. I always hope it's a good game. But you know something? The one that we're in now, the battlefield that we're in, it's a good game too. You want to make it better? You want to make it more fun, more interesting? Stay close to God. Don't take your helmet off. Don't let Satan's thoughts get to you. And share that with other people as well when they start to feel hopeless. Well, it looks like you may have taken your helmet off. You got to put that back on. I would certainly tell that to a teenager who went out and go, hey, you forgot your helmet. You know, you better put that on because you could be dead in 10 minutes. So let's understand that as we go forward, the importance of what Paul is talking about, it's not really anything physical. He just uses that so we can understand the spiritual a lot better. I hope we see the value of wearing the helmet of salvation.